Priscilla, early in our marriage, I joined an accountability group. What'd you think about that?
I was thrilled because finally, Philip is going to get fixed. These guys will help him because I surely can't.
So when none of that happened, what'd you think then?
I was filled with hopelessness and depression because there's nothing we can do.
Well, that story is a similar story that we've heard now many times. And on today's episode, we're going to talk to you about why accountability groups just didn't work for me.
Hi, this is Phil and Priscilla Fretwell here with Savage Marriage.
We're going to talk about how God is healing and restoring marriages today from betrayal, addictions, and the wounds of their past.
And what He did in our marriage, He can do in yours too.
Accountability groups have been kind of like the holy grail for Christian men, that if you're in an accountability group, everything's got to be going well for you.
That's right. A lot of people, when you meet them, some guys especially, it's the guys, will say, yeah, I'm in an accountability group. Like, hey, I got the badge. I got like my Boy Scout badge,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
I got it.
We're in the club. Yeah.
So how did that go with you? You were in an accountability, but you had a partner.
Yeah.
I mean, was it thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well, you know, it was kind of a little of both. So here's what I'd say was good. I enjoyed the times. I mean, they were good. They let me release a little pressure, you know, and things like that, become a little bit honest. But as far as if you had to say, did that really move me forward in my healing from all the issues that I'd had, I'd have to say no, it didn't. I mean, I made some marginal improvement. But it wasn't until I made some substantial changes, not only in my thoughts about accountability, but also just in our relationship in that area, that I really saw things starting to change.
I know that I did this, and I believe other women do this. They put a lot of trust in that.
Yeah.
That the accountability group will take care of my husband. With you, it was that and the counselor.
Yeah.
The counselor is going to make this right. The accountability group is going to put my husband on a new path. He has people to share, people to put input in his life, and things are going to come out right.
So in case there's somebody out there that doesn't really understand the piece on accountability groups, I just want to describe that. I do know that a number of them can be pretty formal with a list of questions that each meeting, there are some rules that are read, then people go around, they answer the questions about whether they've acted out. And the very last question is something like, so have you lied to us about any of the other questions? Of course, if I had, I would never admit it at that point, right? But it can be along those levels of formality. You know, one thing that is interesting, Priscilla, is most of the time when we talk about accountability groups, they're ascribed to men. So I know that, you know, 2/3 of men, Christian men, say they struggle with porn and masturbation, but about 1/3 of the women say that. So why don't we have any women accountability groups?
Well, you know, God said to Adam, he needed help.
Well, that is true.
Not the women. No, you know, I do wish that in my younger years, there had been a group for women who dealt with porn and masturbation, because mm-hmm. I was dealing with that. I don't remember anyone ever sharing that. It was a kept secret. And I'm glad that today I have people that I talk to about it. And I don't deal with porn and masturbation anymore. That was a long time ago, but it was so shameful. Mm-hmm. And I had no one to tell.
Yeah. Well, I think many times they look at this whole thing as a man's problem, right?
Right.
When a woman is dealing with this, it's even more shameful, right? Because this is not supposed to be your problem.
Our culture says it's a man's problem, not a woman's.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the other issue too is men have been viewed by this purity culture as almost like wild oxen sexually. They can't restrain themselves, and you got to put them in a group. And when you put them in a group, all these guys working together will help restrain each other.
I believe that we have just accepted this as truth. That these men are wild and fierce and they can't control themselves. And it isn't true. There is an aspect that God has put in our spirit that we do have self-control.
Yeah. It's a fruit of the Spirit.
Correct.
It really is. Well, we were on a Family Life Today segment back in March that they aired, and we were with Dave and Ann Wilson. During that conversation with Dave and Ann, this topic on accountability groups came up. You can find this segment at familylife.com, and I believe it aired on March 22nd. We wanted to play about a 4 or 5 minute segment out of that because it addresses this point, and we're going to come back to you after that. And so I go find the best counselor I can absolutely find in town and start setting up appointments, and I was super forthright with them. Looking back on it, I wasn't 100% honest, but I did kind of work the plan through that and went to them for 5.5 years.
5.5 years?
Yep.
And did you beat it?
Well,
Priscilla just laughed.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's,
I guess that's the answer.
5.5 years into this, I'm at his office. And I said, hey, let me ask you a question. What do guys do that's got this problem? Do we just go to a counselor the rest of our life? And he said, well, he said, frankly, Phil, most guys, they get their sin down to a level they think they can manage and then they just stop. And I said, well, you know, I think I'm there. I think I've got it down to a pretty low level and I can just manage it. And he goes, all right. And so I stopped going and I told Priscilla, I said, you know, I think I'm done with this and we're moving on. And she didn't know much about what was happening at the counselor's office. Mm. She really didn't. She wanted to ask questions, but I said, hey, if you keep asking me all these questions, I'm not going to be honest with him if I think I got to tell you everything I'm telling him. So I kind of shut her down. Mm. And created my own little secret world here with a counselor that she really didn't know much about.
You guys, is that pretty typical, do you think, of someone struggling with porn? And it could be men, it could be women. But there is this thought that I'm just going to get it to a manageable kind of, it's not that bad, but they're still playing with that. Is that pretty typical, do you think?
I think so.
Yeah, I've heard people refer to everybody deals with a normal level of lust. And so you just have to manage it as a guy. And that had been my experience going to accountability groups, that you walk around the table and everybody's got the problem. And so, you know, you just kind of manage it. You get through life and everybody else is doing it and it'll be okay.
Yeah, I would agree with the guys I've met with over 30 years, 40 years really in ministry. It's that story. It's like, if you have a men's group, and I don't know about women's groups, I know there's issues there as well, but I know for men, it would be go around the table, who looked at something this week? 3 of the 10 did, the other 7 were good. The next week, the other 7 did and these 3 didn't. So it was like a week or monthly thing, but it wasn't completely gone thing. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like, okay, we'll pray for you, quit it. And we'll see you next week. Am I right? Is that sort of what you experienced?
Yeah. And we don't press in. Hmm. And the reason we don't press in is I don't want you to press into me. And
what do you mean by press in, asking deeper questions?
Yeah. Like they said, okay, so, you know, I struggled a little bit last week. You know, everybody goes, okay, yeah, we struggled. And then someone, I said, what happened? He said, well, you know, I looked at some porn on site. I was messing my computer. So nobody says, what were you looking at specifically? What was the genre? What was the trigger that took you to there? How is that playing out in your marriage now? Is that what you looked at? Is that showing up in your sex life with your wife now? So we never press in deeply. And the reason we don't is we don't want anybody to ask us the questions.
Yeah, and I also found that, you know, because, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, but when I admitted to my church, early when we started church, that I had struggled with porn, this is 1990, I had guys want to meet with me, and that was their struggle. So they felt like, oh, I can talk to Dave about this. And I learned over hundreds of meetings, and I never told a guy this, but when I listened to their story the first time they met with me, I told Ann, I would never tell her any details, but I say, I met with a guy, and I just started counseling other guys. If somebody comes to you confess their porn struggle, you can multiply it by 10 or 100. Whatever they're telling you, multiply it times 50, because they're not going to tell you what's really happening. They're going to say, I struggle with porn this week.
Yeah.
And nobody asks, well, what's that mean?
Well, right. That's depressing.
That's scary.
Well, I'm thinking like as a spouse, as a wife, I'm hearing like, oh, what they told you, there's more, it's deeper, there's probably more stuff going on.
I'm guessing that's true about any sin, but definitely in this area.
It is. It's releasing the pressure like a valve, just enough so that you feel better that I confess something and then you shut it and then you continue on.
And rarely do you get to the root.
Right.
Like, why are you doing this?
You know, that's what you mean
deal
by
with the
in.
Symptoms, you deal with the behavior, like even sounds like you did with your counselor a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But do you ever dig in there and say, what's going on here?
Wow, that was a good conversation with Dave and Ann on that. And what's your reaction, Priscilla?
Well, that was a real conversation, right?
Yeah.
Just getting back down to the nitty gritty here. You know, I felt like, Ann, this is depressing. It's depressing to know that men are struggling with this and they're going to accountability groups, but really nothing is being done. It's just a time of sharing.
Yeah. Well, if I look back in my groups, not that they weren't beneficial for me in some way, but I've had to look back at it and say, why didn't that result in the healing as advertised? Because that is the go-to.
Yeah.
Right? If a guy is struggling, you need an accountability partner. And if you get that, everything's going to be great. And it just didn't work out for me. So we've been thinking about that, and we've come up with five different things, at least in my experience, and I would say in the experience of many of the guys that we talk to, that have not worked out well for them.
So number one is very familiar, because we just stated that on the recording with Dave and Ann Wilson, is we don't press into the issue, and we don't ask questions.
Yeah, you mentioned in there that we just release pressure, and that's
right.
Very much the way I felt. You know, I would go into a group going, oh my gosh, I have got to confess something here to this, to my friend or my friends, you know, and I would just hate myself all the way. But after I've done it, many times they might come back and say, I understand, or I've experienced that, or something like that, that makes me feel just a little bit better. And I feel like the pressure now has declined.
Right. I think this is where wives can come in. The accountability group needs to ask, well, have you told your wife? Have you shared this with her?
Mm-hmm.
Or even like, what kind of genre are you watching? You know,
they need to press in.
Press in. How often are you doing this? And what triggered you to go look at porn? I mean, something has to be happening inside.
Yeah. The typical line of questioning is somebody might say, I struggled with this. And other people would acknowledge it. And some people might say, I struggled too. But nobody says, tell me exactly what you're struggling with here. How did you get there? You know, they ask all these questions that we ran through in the recording there with Dave and Ann. And those types of things will start to boil down into where is the root. And it's not only that, but we don't really practice the complete transparency. I know I didn't. And it's amazing how many times that somebody will call me that's heard about our ministry or read our book, and they'll start going through their own sexual struggles. And they'll say that they're in a accountability group. And I'll ask them, have you shared that with the guys in the group? Most of the time, the question is no, I haven't. And then we get back to why and why not and all those types of things that come back in there.
Yeah, transparency is one of the keys, right,
mm-hmm.
to all of this. It's being transparent with your group. And then to anyone who asks you a question, when we're in these groups, I think we're concerned about, are these guys going to come back to the group?
Let's not make it too hard.
Let's not make it too hard, because the numbers say I'm successful.
Yeah.
You know, if the numbers go down, then it's kind of like, we only have two guys in this group. But in those small groups, you could actually be quite transparent. You know, but we're looking at the numbers of, I hope they come back.
Yeah. Instead of, are they getting healed? Yeah.
Right.
Well, second thing I think that we don't do right is that we don't really define sin correctly. We look at it as outward actions. Most of the time, people will define a failure. They'll say looking at porn or masturbating might be a failure. But if you look at this, you have to back it up. In every single case of an outward manifestation, there is an inward manifestation of sin first, and it's at the point of lust. It said there's a conception of lust. They talk about this in James, that there's a conception of lust that comes from temptation. So there's a temptation that leads to a conception of lust that then gives birth to sin. We are too late in what we're talking about. We're talking about behaviors where we really need to be talking about what is going on inside of me.
What's in your heart?
Yeah, because there are people that show up at the group. They have not acted out outwardly, but they are struggling with lust right then, and they've got nothing to report. So what we need to do is focus on not just the outward action, but we need to come back to the root, really what is happening in the heart Because the Bible says that if you look on a woman with lust in your heart, you've committed adultery. It's as if you have done it. And most of these groups are just focusing on what's happened on the outside.
And then number three would be, we become confession partners and not accountability partners. We're constantly wanting to confess to offload this heaviness on our shoulders.
Yeah. It's like we're going in with a bunch of priests. You know, what we have to really think about is what are we accountable for? As I just talked about, you got to move the accountability before the acting out. Us going in and confessing a whole bunch of sin that we've already done is going to have limited help. Now, you might say, Phil, but in James, it says that if you confess to one another and pray for each other, you'll get healing. That is true. And that brings up another piece of this. We frequently confess and we don't pray.
We don't pray for one another. We just want the healing.
There'll be a confession. There'll be a release of pressure. But as far as the ministry through prayer towards one another, it's very perfunctory typically in these groups. Many of them are at lunch and stuff like this, and it's hard to get to that place of really feeling comfortable to pray. But verse in James that talks about if you confess your sins one another and pray for one another, you'll be healed. That's like a two pieces of this ticket, right? It's not just the confession, but it's also the prayer. And many times we'll lead this out.
In the groups, there probably isn't a time where someone could cry out and say, I want to expose this ugliness that I have participated in, and I hate it, and I want to get rid of it. Does that ever take place in an accountability?
Not group? Ones that I don't know that I've ever heard an earnest plea in a cry out. Sometimes we call that a bondage cry, right?
We're
crying out because of the bondage. It's like the children of Israel that cried out for their bondage, and it said God heard them. And he sent Moses. I don't know that I've ever heard that in a group of guys like that. But that is certainly a really big key. And that brings us to number four. You know, we do not typically encourage husbands to disclose to their wives what they're dealing with.
The person who's most hurt by all this.
Yes, we don't. And what winds up happening is we develop more intimate relationships with our band of brothers than we do actually with our wife. And the whole objective here is to get to a place of intimacy with our wife, but we're working hard to cultivate it with a bunch of guys. And guys that really love each other will come back and say, have you talked to your wife about that?
Right. I remember in the other podcast you shared about Doug, a friend of ours.
Yeah.
That you, he called you and you said, I just looked at porn. Mm-hmm. And he said, have you talked to Priscilla?
Like, it was like the first thing he said.
Right. Like, have you told her, you know? And I don't think it's hard to get to that point with husbands and wives to say, yeah, I need to tell her first.
Yeah.
I need to talk to her. But it's really pressing in again, pressing in and saying, listen, you're not going to get through this unless you talk to your wife. Because she has the most to lose.
Yeah, even that verse, I think, is in Matthew that says, if you come to the altar and you have an offering, leave your offering, and you know that your brother has something against you. You leave it, and you go reconcile to your brother. You are taking your confession, your reconciliation back to the person you've offended. And in this relationship, when you've used your body inappropriately, you have offended your spouse because your body belongs to her. And you might say, well, she doesn't know about it. So why am I going to tell her? Then she's really going to be offended. But I think she knows.
She knows. In her
spirit, she knows. You knew.
I knew.
Even though you didn't like know, in your spirit, you knew.
Yeah. And I think the wife senses a disconnect. If your wife is saying, why can't we connect? Why is it that you don't know me emotionally? Why is it that we just can't seem to get it together? It's probably because something is happening in there.
Now, we know this is a controversial point about bringing your wife into this. And it unfortunately goes back to a scripture that says your wife is a weaker vessel. And people have got that all misconstrued, right? We have looked at that at the beginning, God told Adam he needed help. And if he needed help, he was going to bring a helper to him that was able to help him. And that meant she was going to be strong and she was going to come in and it was going to be for Adam's good. But when we do not involve our wife, we do not believe that we actually needed help and that our wife was placed in our life to help us.
That's right.
And so we hide.
I have the privilege of serving with Whatever It Takes Ministries 4 Days to Hope for Women. I will tell you, those women who are coaches are strong women. They are actually badass women. And I have never seen this before in my life. Mm. A group of women who are in love with Jesus and want to serve him and also want to help women who are struggling, like the wives of these men who are in accountability groups. And they have taken on the coaches, these coaches that I'm speaking of, they have taken this on and they have cut the giant's head off in their marriage. And their marriages have changed. That they're perfect? No. But that there has been a change. And they are walking the road to healing with their husbands. And things have changed because their husbands decided to be transparent to their wives and to be disclosed everything that they have been involved in.
I mean, Priscilla, if I had to pick one thing that we've done lots of stuff here to work through our problems. If I had to pick one thing and say this was a giant change for us, it's this point.
Yes, it has been.
That I have decided to bring you into a place of intimacy in my life, that you will know me and you'll know me for all my flaws and my weaknesses. And as a result, God has used you as a place of grace and mercy and compassion in my life that I never received from all these guys. See, I received some sympathy from these guys.
Right. You'll do better next week.
Yes. Yeah. You'll do better next week. Right. Yeah. Exactly. But never this place that we were really looking for.
Yeah. I believe that too. I believe that this thing of being able to share with your spouse all the junk that you have held on to and be able to see God move in your life is key to a relationship that's thriving.
And that brings us to the last point, point number five here. And so what we've typically seen is that many of these accountability groups, and I won't say all, but many of them are kind of a band of brothers. They're struggling peers, and there is really no coach who's a true overcomer. I remember 30 years ago, a friend of mine came to me, and he said he was struggling, and we knew each other from church, and we had gone to lunch, you know, and I liked him, and we were friends as couples, and he came to me, and he disclosed to me one day at lunch that he was struggling with masturbation. I was too, but I didn't have as much humility as he did to bring that out and say it, and so he said he wanted to know if I would be an accountability partner for him. I said, of course. Periodically, every month or two, at a lunch, he would say, I need to tell you. Typically, it was at the end of lunch. It wasn't the first thing he said. It was kind of like we're getting ready to go. And he'd say, hey, I need to tell you that I masturbated the other day. And I would say, okay, well, hey, thank you for telling me. I think that's really great. But, you know, I'll pray for you and just trust God that that'll, you know, I said something very religious, I'm sure.
Because that's your religious days.
I said something very religious with no self-disclosure is probably what I did. And that's the way it went. And he didn't get any better. I never shared anything. And that's just kind of the way the relationship went. But I think the fact is we need a coach. We really need somebody and call us to a higher level.
Everyone needs someone who can say, hey, I don't have it perfect, but I've seen God.
Yeah.
I've seen God move in my life in this way. And I can testify to what he's done.
We've been using this word accountability. I don't think it's the right word. I think it's really discipleship. But see, that word is not very popular today.
It's religious. It has a religious content.
Yeah, it does. It sounds religious. People don't like to use it. But there are other words that are very popular today, like coaching or mentoring. And I think those also describe a relationship that can be helpful. You know, last week I played golf with a friend of mine, and he's a former professional golfer. We were just playing nine holes, but I shot three pars, and that's not me.
No, that's not.
That's a miracle.
It was a miracle for you.
Supernatural miracle of God. And afterwards, he sent me this text, and he said, man, you were really great. That your putting was crazy, you know. And I replied, and I said, hey, you called me to a higher level. And I will tell you, just like he called me to a higher level, and I was trying to imitate the way he was swinging and playing golf, the Apostle Paul called on people to imitate him. And I just want to read a few of these verses here. So Philippians 3:17, brothers, join in imitating me and keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example you have in us.
And also 1 Corinthians 4:16, therefore I urge you to imitate me.
And 1 Corinthians 11:1, you are to imitate me just as I imitate Christ.
And then again, Philippians 4:9, whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice.
And 1 Peter 5:3, be examples to the flock.
These are all examples of how you need a coach.
Yeah.
You know, it is an imitate me. What has this person done that I could do?
I think what happens in many of these groups is that they are all struggling peers. Many of the guys that we deal with that are dealing with unwanted sexual behavior, they have accountability groups. And I'll ask them, so who's the coach? And sometimes they'll say, well, I'm the coach. And I know that they're struggling, right? So
it's a blind leading a blind, and you both fall into a pit.
And so that's what's happening in many of these groups. There is a basic issue on this accountability. And that accountability really only exists when there's been an exchange of value. Now, you might say, Phil, what in the world are you talking about? So let me run through some examples here with you. So when you get hired by a boss is paying you, you are accountable to that boss because he is giving you something of value. Or if you rented something or borrow your neighbor's car, you're accountable to your neighbor. Or children are accountable to their parents because their parents are taking care of them. Or even in marriage, right? We're accountable towards one another because we have given each other ourselves, our lives, our own bodies, right? It says, I don't own my body, but my wife does. The wife doesn't own her body, but the husband does. That's 1 Corinthians 7:4.
When we have an accountability group, there's no exchange of value.
No.
I mean, there's no accountability and there's nothing of value. It's just you come and share a little bit and you walk out.
And that's the reason people can be in these groups and not feel any remorse about not being transparent.
Right.
Because they don't really owe each other true accountability. There is no exchange of value.
Well, also, there's not a sense of what I have been doing has been so damaging, not only to themselves, but to the people around them.
Right.
They don't see their actions as being detrimental to everyone.
No,
because everybody's doing it, and it's just like, okay, all right, well.
And their actions haven't hurt the people around the table.
No.
You know,
yeah.
So you don't really see the impact of your offense like you would if you shared that with your wife or your husband, right?
Is it bad to have groups of guys meeting? I think of this, right? Husbands and wives have each other, but there's a lot of single guys that do need an accountability group. They do not have a spouse to say, hey, this is the stuff that's happening to me.
With all the shortcomings of these groups we've just talked about, right? I still think it's good for people to get together.
Yeah.
And it really comes from 2 Timothy 2:22, which says, flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. So you get this idea, you got to get away from, you're going to run away from the youthful passions. You're going to run toward God, run toward righteousness, but you're going to do it with other people. And so I do think that's a key thing. It is not bad to get together with people, and we actually encourage people to get together. But we would encourage them to get together while they put into place these principles that we've talked about in this podcast.
So we've had a long list of things. So what is it, the bottom line, what do we recommend people to do?
Well, if you're a husband, I'd recommend that you press into your group. I'd cover these five items, talk about what are you missing, and see if you can get to a place of greater transparency and greater intimacy, not just with them, but with your spouse as well.
Yeah, I would encourage wives to press into their husbands and their groups. You know, like, what is it that you guys are talking about? What is it that you shared? What have the men told you? How have they encouraged you? Mm-hmm. In the steps, I would actually want to know, like, what is happening in that group? What is being shared by you? Not, I don't need to know everybody else's story.
Right.
I want to know your story.
Well, that's the pushback from a guy. They'll say, we have taken a sworn secret pledge, right? That we cannot tell anybody what happens to the group. So I don't care what happens to them.
Yeah, it's you.
Yeah.
I want to know you.
Yes, yes. And as husbands and wives, we should be able to share that. The other thing we'd encourage people to do is if you've thought about your group and you say, we don't have a coach or a mentor, we'd encourage you to look for one. Pray, ask around, ask God for one, and find another group maybe. And God will lead you into this. It is something He wants you to have.
Begin to see your spouse as the one you really really want to have an accountability with. You know, like we stated before, this has been life-changing for you and I. Knowing your spouse and being intimate and knowing them fully, everything, past, present, then it brings you to a place that you're going on a different road, you're going forward.
And Priscilla, I will say that when I brought you in as my, quotes, accountability partner, that's not where you stayed, because what happened is that then created the steps for you to become a battle partner for me, and that has made all the difference in my life. This is Phil and Priscilla Fretwell. Thanks for listening. Our book, Savage Marriage, Triumph Over Betrayal and Sexual Addiction, is now available on Amazon.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Savage Marriage Ministries. Also, join our Savage Marriage community at savagemarriageministries.com.
And remember, it's God who is at work in your savage adventure.